This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. Hey, I've got a bunch of announcements for some really cool events that are happening. Listen, right around the corner is Amorous Revolt, which is that brand new queer camping event in Maryland, July 31st to August 2nd, that I've been telling you about. It's designed by queer people for queer people, and you can go to amorousrevolt.com. Use the coupon code Tristan for $50 off your registration. It's literally right around the corner. Okay, and then remember, I'm making my last appearance. I mean, not my last appearance, but at least for a little bit, my last appearance in New York on Tuesday, August 4th. I'm teaching Anal Pleasure 101 at the Pleasure Chest to help them kick off and celebrate Anal August. It's going to be at their store on the Upper East Side in New York City, and you can go to pleasurechest.com. This is a free event, and so I just want to tell people, if you want to be there, there may be space restrictions. I mean, they have a really good space, but I would get there early if you like wanted a chair, for example. Okay, and then I hope you're going to join me at CatalystCon West this year. It's September 11th to the 13th at the Los Angeles Marriott Burbank Airport Hotel. I am facilitating the opening keynote, which was just announced and has these amazing speakers. And also, as part of the pre-con workshop lineup, I'm teaching my sex educator boot camp, level one and level two, on Thursday, September 10th, and Friday, September 11th. So you should definitely check those out. You should definitely register. It's one of my favorite things that I'm doing right now. It's real professional training for sex educators. You can also use the coupon code Tristan for $10 off your registration. So go to catalystcon.com to find out everything you need to know. Let me tell you about today's guest. Debbie Herbenick is an associate professor at Indiana University's School of Public Health, director of the Center for Sexual Health Promotion, and a research fellow and sexual health educator at the Kinsey Institute for Research in Sex, Gender, and Reproduction. She is the author of more than 90 scientific publications about sexual health and relationships, and a lead scientist on the 2009, 2012, 2013, and 2014 National Surveys of Sexual Health and Behavior. Passionate about sexuality education, Dr. Herbenick has taught human sexuality at Indiana for the past 12 years, published 6 books about sex and love, and thousands of newspaper and magazine columns about sexuality. She's currently president-elect of the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, also known as ASECT. And she works on a range of research and education projects related to women's sexual pleasure, pain during intercourse, consumer sexual behavior, sexual assault, love and intimacy, genital self-image, and lots more. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Debbie.
Thanks for having me.
So you have done so much great research and writing about sexuality, but I want to talk about your new book because it's really exciting and it's like a whole new area that not a lot of people are talking about. So the new book is called The Coregasm Workout. How did you first get interested in connections between exercise and sexual arousal and pleasure?
Well, mostly it came from my work as a sex columnist for years for different newspapers and magazines. And every now and then I would get a question, usually, well, it was at the time almost always from a woman who was having orgasms while she exercised. And generally the question was really framed around, you know, like, what's going on? Why does this happen? How does it happen? Is this an okay thing that my body does, or I don't understand and I just want to understand? And I would always go back to the research, you know, every year or two when I would get questions like this, and couldn't ever find anything that had been written about it. But I did know that it happened. I hadn't had one myself at the time, but I had had like arousal from sit-ups and crunches when I was younger. So I certainly believed women who said that this happened to them. And then, you know, over time, it had just sort of, you know, progressed over the years. So I would get these questions from people wanting to explain it. And one of the things I like doing as a researcher is just trying to help people understand what's happening in their lives. So, you know, we are busy doing lots of different research, but there was, you know, several years ago, I thought, well, let's just kind of pull something together and see if we can understand more about it. So we put a survey out on the internet to ask about, to ask women about their experiences with arousal or orgasm from exercise. And we got a lot of responses in a very short period of time that described in great detail what was happening. And once that study came out, it just, and the media picked up on it, what happened was so many more people saw, you know, the research, and they said, this happens to me too. I want to know more about it. I want to help with the research. And we heard from lots of both women and men. And so that really opened the doors to more research, then eventually the book too.
And so you obviously, you know, struck a nerve. And according to your research, 10% of the people you studied have had exercise-induced orgasms, which is different than just arousal.
Right, right. So, about 10% of both women and men have had it happen at least once in their lives. Fewer people have it with any regularity. But it's still, you know, not a small number of people who say, yeah, you know, I know what this is like. It's happened to me before. And I expected it would be somewhere around that number, because what I noticed is after we did the research and I would go around and either talk to people at conferences about it, or even just among groups of friends when they were asking what I was up to and, you know, what kinds of work I was doing lately, when I would talk about it, if the group was, you know, let's say around 8 or 9 or 10 people at least, there was always somebody who in that group would sort of like have like this like sly smile, and like either, you know, sometimes they'd feel comfortable and they'd say it in the group what happened to them, and other times they would just kind of take me aside and say, you know, like there's this machine at the gym, or when I do crunches, or whatever the case was. You know, I just kept hearing from people that this happened to them too, so it just, you know, it just really kind of further motivated me to continue in this area.
And so do certain exercises or kinds of exercises, because you mentioned crunches or in machines at the gym, induce arousal and pleasure more than others?
Yeah, there are some that it happens with more than others, but it's not like there's a magic exercise or two or three. You know, when we first heard about this, we often would hear about like hanging leg raises and crunches on the captain's chair, or crunches laying down. But there was really even in our first study, just so many different kinds of exercises that we figured out it's less about the exact exercise that you do and more about, you know, what's happening inside your body, like what that exercise does to you. So, you know, the common element is that they tend to be pretty demanding exercises on the core abdominal muscles for any given person. So for some people, you know, doing a lot of crunches is going to be really demanding for them. And for others, that's kind of like a piece of cake, but they would be more challenged and their muscles more fatigued if they did, for example, a lot of pull-ups.
Right. Right. And interestingly, you know, one of the parallels that you discuss is sort of just like sex, you have to warm up and kind of be pretty far along in order to first experience arousal during exercise.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, we just didn't come across anybody who, you know, has an exercise-induced orgasm on like their first or second crunch. So there's always some degree of warming up, of getting your muscles going, of, you know, reaching some level for exercise of fatigue or for sex, some level of arousal before people experience orgasm.
And what did people tell you like an exercise-induced orgasm felt like? Or how was it different from an orgasm during masturbation or during sex?
Well, a couple summers ago, I interviewed women face-to-face who had exercise-induced orgasms pretty regularly, and we asked them that question. And many of these women do have orgasms from other ways, like from masturbation or from oral sex or intercourse. Not all of them do, but most of them did. So most of them were able to make some kind of comparison. And, you know, I think the best information came from people who had them from multiple sources because they could say, well, it's like this, but not like that kind. And what that was that we had a number of people who said, you know, it feels, nobody said it felt like a clitoral orgasm among the women. They would say that it feels like an orgasm from vaginal intercourse, but a lot less intense. I do think there's probably some variability with that. We've had a couple people, not many, but a couple people who talk about some pretty intense orgasms while they work out. But for the most part, people find them, you know, more subdued, and which is good because, you know, to the extent that they happen in public, they're not obvious to other people.
Right, right. Okay, we're going to take a little break, but I want to hear way more about this. This is really a way to get us all exercising, I think. I mean, for me, it was like very motivating to read this book and be like, oh, this could be a side effect. I like this very much. Okay, so stay with us. We are going to keep talking about orgasms, arousal, sex, exercise. So don't go anywhere.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking today with Dr. Debbie Herbenik about her new book, The Corgasm Workout, and about her research, which delves into the connections between arousal and orgasm and pleasure and exercise. So, Debbie, you talked about the abdominal muscles. What are some of the other connections? Like, why do you think this phenomenon happens that people get aroused or even have an orgasm while they're working out?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, we don't really know why it happens. You know, like, what is it about the human body being sort of built this way that makes it so easily aroused or, you know, for some people, orgasmic during exercise? I have no idea. You know, we are continuing to do research in this area. There's some other research that suggests that when you activate the sympathetic nervous system, so the sort of fight or flight system that we have in our bodies, that particularly for women, that they may be more easily aroused once they're presented with like some type of erotic stimulus. So in that kind of research, like they'll activate women's FNS sometimes through exercise, like walking on a treadmill, and then show them sexy images in a lab. And when women do that, they tend to be more aroused than, you know, if they're not doing the FNS activation, like walking on a treadmill at first. So there may be something to that. You know, we certainly had a number of people in our studies who said that either their orgasms are more intense or just a lot more likely if they've done some degree of cardio first. So when we were testing some of the exercises for the Corgasm workout book, we actually would, you know, we had them try different kinds of things. And one of the things we had them try was doing some cardio first for at least 20 or 30 minutes and then going directly from the cardio to these core abdominal workouts, like crunches or bicycle crunches or hanging leg raises and so on. And we found that that was a really strong trigger for people, that there was this effect of going right from the cardio to the core muscle strengthening exercises that seemed to produce arousal in about 2/3 of women. And, you know, that's exciting for us. It's exciting because, you know, I think many people do look for ways that they can enhance their desire or enhance their arousal, and we don't have a whole lot of good ways of offering that to people. But the idea that there could be something that's like free to them and healthy and safe and effective, you know, not for everyone, but for many people is, you know, to me a real bright spot.
Absolutely. I mean, this makes me think of Emily Nagoski's book, Come As You Are. And I had Emily on the show earlier this summer. And talking about activating the sympathetic nervous system, the idea that you could do it with something as easy as cardio seems really promising for a lot of different people.
And also it does, absolutely.
Yeah, uh-huh. And also makes sense in the research that she cites, which is also from the Kinsey Institute, just about, you know, the kind of gas and the breaks of arousal and desire, especially for women.
Yeah, and Meredith Chivers and Lori Brado, you know, these days are doing work on, you know, there are these wonderful Canadian researchers who do research on arousal and desire and looking at maybe like arousal as a precipitating factor for desire. And I think that's the case for many people, that, you know, once something happens and your body gets triggered in this arousing way, you can sort of notice it and go, oh, well, that feels good. You know, do I want to keep going with this or not? And, you know, I think in the case of exercise and exercise-induced arousal and orgasm, what I try to talk about in the book is, you know, it's because I don't actually care if they exercise all the way to orgasm. I mean, that's up to individual people to decide if they want to do. But if you can kind of learn your body and understand how it works to the point where you can maybe move it in ways that, you know, inspire arousal in it, then it gives you more options. You know, you can still, while you're exercising, go, do I want to do anything with this arousal or do I want to just sort of keep working out? Or, you know, do I want to go home and masturbate? Do I want to go home and have sex with my partner? I just think it gives you more to work with your body and the way it connects to your mind and your sexuality.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that struck me about many of the people you interviewed for the book was how articulate and specific they were about these experiences they have during exercise. And it made me think they seem to have a certain level of awareness about their bodies, right? That I wish more people had. They can talk so specifically about kind of what the process is like for them and what the feelings are like for them. And so I feel like the thing that strikes me about this book is that it's about orgasm. It's about, you know, exercise-induced orgasms or this particular kind of workout or exercise-induced arousal, but it's kind of bigger than that. Do you agree?
Well, yeah, and I appreciate you feeling that way and noticing that way. I mean, it was something that, you know, and actually for many of the people, including the ones we quoted in the book, you know, for many of the people, it was their first time talking about their exercise-induced orgasms and arousal. And for some of them, it was one of their first times ever talking about sex. Some of the women who I interviewed were from countries where, you know, you don't talk about sex, you know, countries and cultures where that's really sort of shut off. And, you know, and they would actually use the interviews as a chance to also then at the end, once we got through the research interview, would say and sort of just ask us questions, you know, about sexuality. Or I had a trainer with me at all times, as a, who was my co-interviewer. Sometimes they would ask questions about their workouts too. But it was a really neat experience because, you know, we did ask so many detailed questions and about how the orgasms felt and where in their body they noticed it. So we were probing for a lot of things that maybe they didn't realize they knew, you know, and but they did, you know, somewhere inside them they would think about it and kind of sit back and then and take some time to answer it. But I think for me as a researcher, it was just really neat to see these women walk through in their minds, you know, the different kinds of words that they could use to describe something as nebulous to many people as an orgasm. And so just listen to the kinds of words that they came up with was really, really cool, especially when they looked back on their earlier lives and talked about, for many of them, how these exercise and orgasms started when they were kids or teenagers and really didn't even know that they were orgasms, right? They just knew, like, even as kids, some of them had words for this. Like, one young woman said that when she was growing up, she would call it tickle pickle. And, you know, it was like these ticklish feelings in her stomach that she would feel. She didn't know anything about orgasms or sex, but she would just be like, oh, when I do this, it's like the tickle pickle game.
Right. And then it's interesting because some of them then sort of reference back and say, when I then masturbated or when I had sex to orgasm, there was this familiarity. It was different, but it was familiar to this other feeling I'd already experienced. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was these later experiences as like teenagers or young adults where they were like, oh, that, you know, that's what this is. And they would put these pieces together, which, you know, were just really cool. And, you know, early on we were talking about, you know, how I got interested in this, and I was saying how, you know, even when I would hear from these people, it was familiar to me because I remembered, you know, as a probably 12, 13, 14-year-old doing crunches and having these feelings, and I didn't know anything about orgasm at the time, but I remember in my case, like, I would have these weird, you know, to me at the time, weird feelings in my lower abdomen that were just new to me. And I would get to that point in my crunches and I would stop. And when I started doing this research, it was kind of like, huh, you know, like, so I was somebody who had these feelings and sort of backed away from them. They were really strong and powerful and maybe in some way scary. And there were obviously some other people who would have these feelings and keep going, which is also a very interesting kind of like individual difference from person to person. Like, you know, what is it that made like 12-year-old me go, whoa, like, I don't know about that. Like, that's big and scary, but would make another 12-year-old go, huh, like, that's interesting. I want to find out more about this.
Yeah, it is really, it's really fascinating. Now you lay out this corgasm, which corgasm, I just want to say is just another word for exercise-induced orgasm.
Right.
And you lay out this workout and the principles behind it. And I want to go over that, but we have to take another break. So coming up, we are going to talk about the principles of CORE, what C-O-R-E also stands for. It's all very clever. And how you might incorporate this into your life. So stay with us. More with Dr. Herbenik when we come back.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to tristan@puckerup.com. That's tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. This is a fascinating conversation. I hope you're into this, guys, because this is all about the connections between exercise and arousal and even exercise-induced pleasure and orgasms. I'm talking with Dr. Debbie Herbenik, and her new book is called The Coregasm Workout. And she's researched this diligently. So the fascinating thing is that there's these basic principles which I feel like can apply to everyone, whether you're trying to have an orgasm during exercise or not, but I feel like could really just improve your overall sexual health and function. So Debbie, let's start with what the principles of CORE, what CORE stands for and what the principles are.
So the name CORE-gasm actually was coined by Men's Health years ago, and they just called, you know, exercise orgasms, CORE-gasms, because they seemed to involve the core abdominal muscles. And as my co-interviewers and I were doing the interviews with women a few summers ago, we just started noticing these patterns, you know, that we were hearing from people about how it happened. And I'm not normally somebody who really likes acronyms, really, but, like, this just seemed to fit, and I know that they help people remember things. So, you know, I tried to find a way for them to make some sort of sense. And I came up with the core principles, where the C stands for challenge yourself, the O for order matters, R for relax and receive, and then E, engage your lower abs. And so what that means, you know, the first one had to be about challenging yourself, because as I mentioned earlier, you know, we just never, ever came across somebody who said, as soon as I do my first crunch or my first leg raise, I have an orgasm. It was always some degree of challenging. So, you know, if you're somebody who can do tons and tons of crunches, then you're probably not going to have a coregasm after 10 or 20 crunches. You know, they were, for people who are pretty fit, this could happen after 50 or 100 or 200 crunches. And not in, like, slow, leisurely sets. You know, they were often done, you know, like all at once, or if you are doing them in sets, still in pretty demanding sets. For people who they happen to, while they're doing strength training or weightlifting, they're using weights that are, you know, challenging to them in some way. So, the point being, you've got to challenge yourself. You've got to usually get to some point of muscular fatigue. We have some ideas biologically why that might be the case that we're, you know, hoping to test actually in a lab later this year, but we don't fully know. But right now, that is just such a clear component of coregasms for people. And the second one was,
let's go to the O.
The O was about order, and that was a bit about what we talked about already, which was just that, you know, there seems to be something for many people about the order that they do their exercises. So for most people, it was doing some kind of core or some type of cardio first and then going right into their core exercises. There seems to be another subgroup, though, that's really interesting where, like, they don't do that, but they're just doing such highly demanding exercises that they would actually say, oh, no, like, I could never do cardio first because then I wouldn't be able to do, you know, this high level of a workout. So one example was a young woman who has a very reliably from pull-ups. And, you know, I don't know about you, Tristan, but, like, I just don't have the strength to do many pull-ups. In fact, not even one. Like, I cannot do a single unassisted pull-up. And as
I'll just put that out there. No, I can't.
Yeah, most women can't, and actually most men can't. So, you know, as I would connect with my colleagues who study exercise, they were like, you know, that's one of the hardest core, you know, exercises that anyone could do. And, you know, but this young woman has coregasms after either 8 or 9 pull-ups. And she's just, you know, she's just naturally strong and fit and then has taken that to a higher level of being able to do these. But, you know, she's somebody who said, look, if I went and, like, ran for 30 minutes, I wouldn't be able to do my 8 or 9 pull-ups. And if I couldn't do that many, she was like, I'm not going to have them have a coregasm after 2 or 3 pull-ups. So it was just, you know, sort of interesting. But, like, you know, this idea of having to, like, figure out where in your workout you do it was really key to most people. For R, we had relax and receive, which was that there seemed to be for many people, not everyone, but, like, some degree of, like, being receptive to it. So even though people's first coregasm usually came as a surprise, like, it just kind of happened to them, you know, once people sort of knew what was happening and could kind of sense it in their body that it was approaching, you know, they really found that being receptive to it mattered, being open to the experience, which is so much like sex. You know, if you close yourself off, if you don't want to go there, if you're like afraid of these big feelings that are coming and you kind of turn off or turn away from it or blank out your mind, it's going to be a lot harder to have an orgasm. And
This element seemed to resonate, I think, most strongly with it's identical to sex in that way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there's a story in the book about a woman named Mary who, like, when she was describing her corgasms, she the way she talked about it was receiving a corgasm.
Yeah.
Rather than like having one.
Yeah, and I loved that. It was so interesting to me when she talked about that.
Yeah, and I feel like, though, it really, like, it highlighted how, again, like, our state of mind and our willingness to go with the feeling and be curious about it rather than sort of like, what the hell is going on, plays a big role, I think, especially for women.
It does. You're totally right. And I mean, I've had some women come to my office before, you know, they're like straight A students. They have their checklist. They're really, you know, kind of great about getting things done. But, you know, they'll come and say, I don't know why I can't have an orgasm. And I ask them about it and they're saying, I have this vibrator and it's not working. And it's so interesting because, you know, for so many people, like there are other fixes we can give them, like talk about the clitoris or talk about sex or openness or this or that. And, there's this like core group of people who will sometimes say, I'll say, well, let me ask you something. Like, why are you masturbating? Why did you get a vibrator? And they're like, well, because I haven't had an orgasm yet. I'm like, well, are you feeling aroused? You know, are you feeling into it? Like, and you know, there's some people who aren't, but they feel like this is just something they have to check off. And as a mentor of mine said to me years ago, she was like, you know, you could have the most amazing vibrator or a great partner or this or that, but like, unless you're, you know, kind of into it, unless your mind is kind of sexually tuned in or turned on, it's not going to do anything. And I think, you know, we all, like, that's a great way of thinking about sex, and it also was the case for these women with the exercise. We had one woman who was saying, you know, she would easily have these during her core exercises, but she wouldn't have them if she did a group core exercise, which some people do, but she wouldn't, because she said she was so distracted by like comparing herself to other women or to the instructor and making sure she was doing the exercises right, that her head just wasn't in it. And in that way, it's also so similar to sex when we're just like focused on our performance or thinking about like body image issues. It's going to be a lot more difficult to relax and have that orgasm during sex if your mind is just elsewhere.
That's what I loved about this book, is that there's like lessons in it. You think it's a very specific and almost narrow topic, because it's about exercise and arousal and desire. But like then there are these little lessons that pop out at you that really feel universal.
Thanks. Yeah, I appreciate you noticing that, because you know, I do think for some people that were in our studies, you know, they did find that this was almost like a backdoor to a better sex life, right? Like that they had this unique experience in life where this is just how their bodies worked and this was something that happened to them. But over time, you know, many of them realized like how they could, you know, what they could learn from this experience and apply to their own sex lives.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, really neat for me to go through with them. And so, yeah, the last one, E, was just engage your lower abdominal muscles. And this was, you know, really, again, just that it's not just any exercise. You know, we don't have, you know, many people experiencing, you know, corgasms from, you know, just any old exercise. They're really from very ab-focused exercises, hence the name that Men's Health gave it years ago with corgasm. And when we would ask women in the interviews, you know, where do you feel this? Like, where in your body do you feel it? The trainers and I would just, you know, get to the point where we could just anticipate what was coming, because these women would take their hands and kind of make a V shape with them and like point down to like their very much lower abdominal muscles, like below the belly button. And they would like push toward the groin, you know, like they'd describe these radiating feelings going down their lower ab muscles, toward their genital area. But not necessarily like on the genitals. You know, they didn't really talk about the clitoris feeling stimulated, just these very internal sensations that started in their lower abs.
which of course are connected to the pelvic floor muscles. I mean, everything is connected. So it makes sense. I mean, when you like put up the diagrams in the book, it really does make sense kind of how it all works. Oh my gosh, we have to take another break. Okay. I have a few more questions, and then I have a really fascinating listener question that I thought you might like to tackle with me.
Okay.
Okay, good. So, everyone, I'm going to ask Debbie next about yogasms from yoga, and then we are going to take a really good listener question. So stay with us. More Sex Out Loud when we return.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I've been talking today about exercise, arousal, and exercise-induced orgasms with Dr. Debbie Herbenik and her new book, The Coregasm Workout. So, Debbie, I don't want to leave men out of the equation here because actually this happens to men and women. And you first heard it about it from women, but then men started coming out of the woodwork telling you about their experiences with not only with orgasm, but sometimes with ejaculation. And this is happening at the gym.
Yeah. And so it's a different experience for men than for women. You know, and which is also why the book itself is a little bit aimed more toward women. I think many men will enjoy reading the stories, especially if it's happened to them and they're trying to make sense of their bodies. But, you know, I don't know really how many men want to necessarily learn this, you know, for themselves. I think some men who are just really curious about their bodies will want to try it and maybe try it at home. But I think, you know, the one difference we found with men and women is that, I mean, everywhere I go, women are like, teach me how to do this. You know, I want to learn how to do this. I want to have this, you know, this fun part of my exercise routine. And many men are really curious about it, but they don't necessarily want to be doing this at the gym because for them, you know, if they go all the way to orgasm, which they don't necessarily, but if they go to orgasm, then they do tend to ejaculate. And so that's the tricky part for some men. You know, but we had many men in our study who this just kind of happened to and who learned how to stop it before they got to the point of ejaculation so they could still experience the arousal. They still liked that. They thought it was interesting. But if they were home, they would let themselves go to ejaculation. And if they were out somewhere in public, they would just, you know, learn to kind of control it a little bit more, which again is a parallel to sexuality too and kind of controlling the timing of your ejaculation.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And so what is all of this thing about yogasms and orgasms from yoga? Is this part of the equation?
You know, maybe, maybe not. I think it's, you know, what I've seen like in a lot of the mainstream media is I've seen a few articles on yogasms and people who talk about having them. Some of them seem close to like, you know, core abdominal related orgasms, but most often especially more recently, some of the articles I've read almost feel more like getting into like a state of flow or like a meditative state, much more mental. And we did have a couple women in our interviews who also had those kind, but they were different in that they didn't necessarily feel it emanating from their core. It's more just like they got into this really like zened out mental space where they experienced a lot of flow that felt at some point orgasmic to them. So I think it's, you know, in that sense, that some of it may be, or at least the causal mechanism of it might be a little bit different.
Mm. Okay, well, this is just all good incentive for everyone to exercise, as far as I'm concerned, because I'm someone who finds it boring, but not if it's going to, you know, bring me these great benefits.
Yeah, it would be interesting for you to try, I think, you know, and just kind of see it. I think for many people starting out with it, it can take some time to build up the core strength. But one of the fun things that's happened really since writing this book is, you know, having friends who, like, after trying for, like, you know, a few weeks or a few months, will sort of text me one day and be like, oh my gosh, you know, it happened today at the gym. And I just think it's great that it's also just opening up some conversations with people about, you know, this idea that orgasms may be a lot more bigger and complicated and nuanced than we often give them credit for. And just because they involve the genitals to some degree doesn't mean they always involve sex.
Right, right, right. It's a good lesson for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I usually have this Ask Tristan segment, and I have a really, I think this particular listener question is on point. It's a rather long explanation, but I think I want to read all of it because I feel like it puts everything in context and kind of gives you a sense of this person. So, you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, so this letter came by email from Angela, and she says, at the ripe old age of 43, after a divorce from a 15-year marriage, a light bulb literally went off in my head. I realized I'd never experienced orgasm. Masturbation had never occurred to me, and I had probably never even experienced a high state of sexual arousal. Thanks to some frank conversations with my fun and sexually adventurous friends, I realized there was much more out there for me to enjoy. I always wanted to be sexual, and I was quite promiscuous in high school, giving out blowjobs, sleeping around with no expectations of reciprocity. I didn't even know what or where the clit was for, and unconsciously, I thought sex was about pleasing men. I was having fun using sex as a way to get guys to like me, but I didn't even realize there was a female orgasm, as no one had ever said there was. I was uneducated on the subject because I was raised Catholic, where sex and shame are basically synonymous. I found a very supportive sex therapist and got started masturbating right away. I tried my finger to no avail, then I discovered the shower head and found myself screaming, laughing, crying with a mix of pleasure and thankfulness. To facilitate my orgasms, I purchased a variety of vibrators and progressed from a peeled cucumber to a dildo. My much better idea there, Angela. I was having so much fun, I couldn't wait to get home to masturbate. My sex toy collection grew substantially. I really love the Enjoy butt plug. Okay. So I discovered that the anal contractions I experience are overwhelmingly pleasurable and that I'd much rather have something in my ass than in my vagina. Anal penetration makes me squirt too, as sometimes I orgasm, but mostly it just feels like a release. My entire view on female sexuality has changed. The pleasure is so euphoric, I just want to keep going all day. I have questions about what I need to be feeling to be having an orgasm. So I'll start off by describing what I know to be an orgasm. I usually start off with lube and toys. I lie on my back. I begin touching my clit, making circles in each direction. My sphincter muscles start contracting first, and it feels amazing. My vagina will contract too as I rub my vulva. Then I use a plug-in wand because I love the fact that they never run out of a charge and they have really strong vibrations. I work the wand until I'm really aroused and find the perfect spot, and this can take anywhere from 5 to 20 minutes. All the while, I experience lots of contractions, and sometimes I get an involuntary buckle that sends pleasurable sensations all the way to my toes and up through my nipples. My body is already buckling, and I feel like I'm riding waves with the contractions and this surge of fiery sensations coursing through my body. I realize just how much power this vibrator has. Usually, my muscles get very tense and then have to let go because it gets too tense and it starts to tire out my muscles. I often have to do this a few times before the release starts. When I feel this warm, syrupy sensation come over me, usually from head to toe, my entire pelvic floor contracts together, distinctively stronger than any of the other contractions. And my body feels like it's lifting. It feels like I've almost left my mind and I'm floating. My legs often open and close like a butterfly. I have this overall euphoric lightness, sense of flight, and a huge release. Okay, so I'm editing a little bit here. After I scream and I feel my body starts to return to its pre-orgasm state, I can still feel my pussy involuntarily move for like 5 or 10 contractions, each one getting weaker. Here's my question. If I'm contracting, especially my anus, and feel little snaps and involuntary buckles of my hips and legs and feeling highly aroused, but I don't get that strong wave, like that strong sensation or a huge release, am I still having an orgasm? Could it be that what I described above is more akin to a full body orgasm? It can take me up to 30 minutes and it often takes the wand vibrator. Is this the only way I can orgasm? I would like to be able to get off with my hands so that I could do it and it would be easier to incorporate into partner sex. But my hands are just not as powerful as with the vibrator. Am I still orgasming with my hands, even though the release feels much weaker and not as impactful? When I hear that people get off really quickly, I wonder if I'm different or if I have a very high expectation of what an orgasm is. I want to teach my body. I've made major strides already, but I want to get that release with my hands. Do I have a clit of steel? And that's why? Please explain to me how you perceive my situation. Okay, Angela, that was a really detailed, which I appreciate details, question. What are your thoughts, Debbie?
That's a big one. I mean, she's got several big questions. I think one of them, if I'm understanding correctly, was whether she's having an orgasm if she has a lot of contractions, but not necessarily the big waves of pleasure. Was that today?
Yeah. Right? One of them was like, I feel all the tingling, all the sensations, but I don't feel the release. And is that also an orgasm? Because that's different from when she feels all of that and then release.
Yeah, and it's difficult to say. I mean, I think, there are certainly men who will ejaculate without pleasure, these anhedonic orgasms and so on, and some women will feel that too. I think it's difficult for an outsider, not in her body, to say this is an orgasm and this isn't. So I personally would encourage her to focus less on, what counts as an orgasm and more about what feels good to her. I mean, if the contractions still feel good, then great. If she really, just wants to go for more pleasurable activities, then, I would encourage her, to pursue the pleasure. But I think, she may have some sense of like catching up for lost time. With, all these years she didn't know about orgasms and all of that, but to the extent that she can focus on just enjoyment is where I would, encourage her to go.
And what do you think about this idea that she feels like her orgasms are weaker with her own hand than they are with a vibrator?
Yeah, they might be, absolutely. I mean, everyone's a little bit different. I think if she really wanted to try to experience orgasm or really strong pleasure with her own hands, she might want to give the wand a break for a while. The wand, as we all know, is an incredibly intense vibrator. And there are, both men and women I've known who really love the wand and enjoy it. But if they're, when they're trying to learn to respond to hand stimulation, which is just feels very different, some people do find it helpful to give the more intense things a break, and kind of build up almost a little bit of sexual frustration or, so that they can then find it easier to try, teaching themselves their hand, which can take time. And, it may or may not happen. I mean, again, everyone's body and sexual response is different. She could try a more variable vibrator, with a multi-speed dial, so she could go from lighter to more intense and see how she feels. But I'm completely unable to predict whether or not she will ever be really responsive with just her hands. Many, many people are. Some people's bodies are different. But my guess is if she varied it more, she might find something pleasurable with other kinds of stimulation over time.
Yeah, and I want to say, Angela, that, you know, vibrators create this kind of stimulation that essentially no human being can mimic. So not you with your own hand and not anyone else. And so it makes sense to me that your orgasms are more intense because you're using a machine that has the ability to have this really focused, really consistent power that just isn't the same when we're working with people and bodies. And I think it's okay. I mean, part of me wants to just be like, you're having these amazing orgasms. You've discovered all this stuff late in life and just go for it and find better positions to incorporate the, which we think she's talking about the Hitachi magic wand, which now we're supposed to call the original magic wand, which you can Google if you don't know what that is, but it's this really powerful vibrator. And yeah, I say if the Hitachi works, and you want to experience that level of pleasure, then keep going and give yourself some slack about the hand situation.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, for all of us, you know, it's just kind of also continuing to challenge these ideas of there being like a right way or a wrong way to get off or have an orgasm. And if, you know, I think that like that's part of the hand thing she has to figure out for herself. Like, does she want to be able to respond to her hand because she wants to be able to do it whenever she wants, you know, even like if she's out camping somewhere and can't plug in a vibrator. And, you know, that's a really different question than like, does she want to experience hand stimulation orgasms just because she feels like she should? And, you know, and they get you to different places, right? Because if you just think that you should, well, there's no real should. You know, we don't all have to have orgasms the same way or all from hands or all from certain kinds of vibrators. So if that's what feels good to you and you like the wand, then great. But, you know, if you want to try lots of different things, you can too. You know, whether it's mouths or hands or other toys or rubbing against the bed or, you know, like the appreciation she has for the shower head too. I think that's part of it, is just sort of knowing that, you know, you respond in different ways to different kinds of sex, just like you would respond in different ways to different kinds of food or drink.
Yeah, absolutely. And there, and I think the difference is not cause for concern. I think it just speaks to our sexual diversity, and it speaks especially to the fact that we can come in these different ways, and each way that we stimulate ourselves or our partner stimulate us is going to produce a different effect. And that's kind of what's really cool and fun about sex.
I think of it like with the movies, right? Like sometimes you want like a different kind of emotional release. You might be in the mood to like laugh a lot, so you see a comedy, or you need some sort of like catharsis and you watch something that's going to make you like, you know, explore all these deep issues you have, or like cry or this or that. But, you know, you sort of kind of, you have to be aware of like your own needs and what you want and what that release is that you're looking for in entertainment or a movie or music. And I don't think sex is all that different. I think sometimes we make it into something that's different, but, you know, it can be experienced in, you know, in silly ways. Like, I think, you know, sometimes even teaching college students, they feel like sex has to be a certain way. I'm like, no, like, you can laugh during sex. You can have very serious, romantic, involved sex. You can have animalistic, kind of crazy, vigorous, energetic sex. Like, there's so many different emotional, you know, qualities to it and physical qualities to it. But it's what you want and what you want to go for.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's a great way to end our show on. Thank you so much, Debbie, for being on Sex Out Loud. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was nice talking with you.
Debbie Hrbenek is Associate Professor at Indiana University School of Public Health and the author of her latest book, The Corgasm Workout. Find out more at her website, mysexprofessor.com. It's a great URL. Follow her on Twitter at Debbie Hrbenek. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, segment producer and editor Colton, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of the show. Until then, talk to me on facebook.com/asktristan, on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio, and talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.